I liked science fiction when I was younger. I used to read a lot of sci-fi books. I don't do it anymore because I really don't have the time to read fictional books because I'm too busy reading theology books with my job. So maybe when I retire, I'll go back to reading sci-fi. I used to like Ray Bradbury. You remember Ray Bradbury? Liked all of his books. But I like sci-fi movies and stuff because in the 60s, that's when it all started happening. You know what I'm saying? The Enterprise, Captain Kirk, the whole shebang. I mean, did you watch TV back then or? Yeah. Remember when it went from like two channels, black and white, to 200 channels, color? It was like, there went my grades. I was like, you got to be kidding me. But back in the day, I did like the series because I was a Trekkie fan. I watched all that stuff. I liked this particular show. I have a picture of, and if you're from that era, you're going to remember who this show is. Yeah. This is, what show is this? Lost in Space. So Gen X people, Gen Z, millennials are going, whoa, what are they doing at this church? We're studying sci-fi as it applies to theology. So this is Will Robinson. I liked Will because I was about the same age of Will at the time. I could identify with his troubles on another planet with bad stuff happening. I think my parents bought me a facsimile of that robot. You could buy him back in the 60s. And that was, well, the robot was the robot. Remember? He was the robot. And we all know, if you were raised in that generation, what he typically said to Will if something bad was going to happen. What is Danger, Will Robinson. Now, every church service is totally different. Every service has its own aura to it, kind of a feel. The last service, when I asked that question, there were people, you had to kind of be there to see it. It was kind of funny because they didn't just say, Danger, Will Robinson. They acted out. You did not do that. So this is the more educated, probably a little more professional group of people, not so Pentecostal, a little more less lively, because Danger, Will Robinson, those arms would come out, right? Bing, and then he would flail them all around and scream, "Danger, danger, Will Robinson!" Right. So what in the world has that got to do with theology? Everything. That's why I used to watch the show. It instructs you in your Christian walk. Because, I mean, you think about it. When you think of somebody like the Apostle Paul, he's like the robot. Yeah, it is. It is kind of funny, but it is true, isn't it? Because what does Paul do in a lot of his writings? Because he wrote most of the New Testament. I mean, if you read his writings, he's constantly telling you, danger, danger, you need to get away from that. And that's kind of what a pastor is. I mean, I know the job description well after, I don't know, 36 years or whatever it is that I've done it. There's many components to it, but part of it is danger. Like, you got sheep, you're the shepherd, they're getting too close to a wolf, to a cliff, to whatever. What are you supposed to do? Hey, go on over there, man. Check it out. I don't care if it's a wolf. Learn to deal with wolves. Build a bridge to them, I know, you need to back up. Danger, danger. And so Paul, in this passage, it's a polemic that he gives in chapter 2, about the danger of these false teachers that have infiltrated the church. And so he's going to get very specific as to what these false teachers teach, because the devil does send people into churches that have taken various worldviews and syncretized them together, and then they bring them into church and they wed them to like biblical concepts, and they sound very convincing. They're just heretics. And Paul says, you got a church full of them, so I'm going to be yelling danger, danger, to the church in Colossae by telling you, you need to wake up. And I would say in our culture and in our world, there's a fair share of false ideologies, false worldviews, false philosophies, false doctrine that you too must be paying attention to in your Christian walk, so that you are not duped and shipwrecked in your faith. And so what we want to do is review what we've been talking about as we've looked at this great chapter of this great polemic of Paul against the false teaching. So let's review, because brain cells die daily, correct? Right? So what is he talking about? Here's the main idea of what he's been talking about. We're reviewing. You should have this memorized at this point. We are called by Paul, as the robot who wants to defend us, to do what? To safeguard our spiritual walk by doing what? Well, you focus on the work of Christ. Now, I know they don't do it anymore, but back in the day, I mean, years ago, when they wanted to train a tailor how to spot counterfeit money, what'd they make them do? Study a whole bunch of counterfeit money? No. They made them so know what a real dollar or $10 bill was like that when they saw the counterfeit, they knew it exactly had different texture, et cetera. They would deal with that, because my dad dealt with a lot of counterfeit money with his job. And so that's how they would train them, is pay attention to that which is real. You can focus then easily on that which is not real. So based on the premise of that command to safeguard your spiritual walk, you would so study Christ in your lifetime that anything that's contrary to Christ, you're going to look at that and go, that's total heresy. I know what that is. And so people that would infiltrate a church like they did Colossae are alive and well today, and they want to use their prideful position to get you to follow them. So Paul says, safeguard your walk by doing what? Three things. One, remember his rule. This is by way of review, right? Colossians 2:8. We had one sermon just on that one verse. What's the rule? To constantly live to safeguard your walk. You should always have your radar up with what you're seeing, what you're hearing, what you're reading. I had people after the last service talking to me. I couldn't even get to the coffee bar because, you know, I'm reading this author and they're saying this. What do you think about that? I'm reading this and what do you think about that? This is good. You're paying attention to what you're reading, what you're seeing. This is good. The reasons why you should do that. Well, the reasons are because of what Christ has done for you. He has given you a wonderful salvation by his good grace, his good mercy. It's an amazing salvation. Safeguard that salvation by understanding that salvation to its fullest. Because a false teacher will come along and say, oh yeah, I believe in Jesus. I'm a Christian. But then when you start talking to them about, well, what do you believe about salvation? And you start studying, then what they say about salvation is not what the scriptures say about salvation. So know who Jesus is and what he's done for you. We're going to add a third one. That's review's done. You ready for three? The third component of safeguarding your spiritual walk. He's going to list three things that you should be careful about in your Christian walk constantly. Danger number one is what we would call the danger of legalism. Legalism. Now, I'm going to show you the text. We're going to read the text in verse 16 with what Paul says here. So that therefore, he says, based on what I just said, he's going to conclude his argument. Because the Greek word un is like what an attorney would use in a court of law. I've given you all this evidence. Based on this evidence, therefore, I'm going to draw my conclusion. So Paul's reasoning like an attorney. Therefore, in light of what I just said about the wonder of your salvation, no one is to act as your judge in regard to what? Food or drink, that's two, or with respect to a festival, okay, that's three, or a new moon, okay, that's four, or a Sabbath day, a Shabbat day. He said, no one's supposed to be judging you about like what you're doing or not doing. Now, I'm going to show you the Greek text because it's so exciting. And you're thinking, serious? It's so early in the morning. I can't shoot at that one. I can shoot at this one. Yeah, TVs don't accept the laser beam, you know? I don't know why. That's, if you were into physics, maybe you could help me, but because I've tried it several times and it doesn't work. So here, this is un. This is therefore, but it's not in the front of the sentence. It's the second word. In the English text, it's a therefore. But in the Greek text, it's this word. This is a negative, may. This word, may. This is a kreneto is the verb to judge. Kreneo is to judge. When you have, follow me. When you have a negative followed by a present tense command, it means stop an action in progress. There's another way to say this grammatically. Don't begin to do something. You use this with your high school students, I'm sure. What do you say, Jack?
Yeah. Don't even think.
Yeah, you've read the Mosaic Code. You tell your child, and it's in the Bible somewhere, but don't even think about doing that with your friends. Huh? Yeah. Now, and then if they're actually doing it, then it's a whole nother. What were you thinking about? Okay, so this is a negative with the present tense command, stop action in progress. So what's that mean? What it sensibly means was the Christians were listening to the heretics who had infiltrated their church with their Greek philosophy, wedded to Gnostic thinking, wedded to Judaistic thinking, the Mosaic law, came up with this new way to approach God. And Paul's like, this is absolute heresy. Stop listening to it because they were duped. And so he says, let me point out to you some areas where you're duped. And the first area he's going to point out where they're duped is these people have got you into a binding legalism to approach God. So grace tells you that you're saved by grace, not of works, and you're free to live your Christian walk, of course, within the bounds of what the scripture says is holy living, but you're free to enjoy your life. Charles Swindoll has a book called Grace Awakening, and it's a great book for a legalist to read. You might be a legalist sitting here today. That you think that the way you approach God is by how meticulous you are on observing laws, rules, and regulations. And I know the position well because I used to be one. And then I woke up after college and realized, wow, why am I not happy? Because John 10:10 says, Jesus said, I've come that you might have life and have it abundantly. God, I feel depressed all the time. The reason why? I was in a legalistic structure that there's certain things I have to do to maintain a holy walk with God. And I was constantly worried about deviating. And the Lord says, you know, you're free. And that's what's happening in this church. Grace says this. Here's what Swindoll says in his book, Grace Awakening. It says, Grace says you have nothing to give, nothing to earn, nothing to pay. You couldn't if you tried. Why? He says salvation is a free gift. You simply lay hold of what Christ has provided, period. And yet the heretical doctrine of works goes on all around the world and always will. He says it is effective because the pride of men and women is strong. He says we simply have to do certain things in order to feel right about it. It doesn't make good humanistic sense to get something valuable for nothing. So you just think in the warp and woof of your being, I know I was saved by grace, but I'm thinking I got to do a whole bunch of things to maintain that position with God. Well, were those things that you're trying to obey, are they in Scripture? No. Where did they come from? Well, kind of invented them. Like, I can't have a deck of cards. Why not? Well, because they use them in casinos for gambling. Well, aren't you just playing gin rummy? Well, yeah, but I mean, just the cards. I can't listen to secular music. Why? Well, I can just only listen to Gregorian chants and things like that. And like, I say, huh? You know, so you invented all these things. It's like, I can't go to a concert, a godless concert. No, I can't show up there because suppose Jesus came back and I'm at this concert. You know, no way. So I've heard all these things, okay? And so Grace says, you're free. He adds to this. He says, please allow me to be absolutely straight up with you. Swindoll says, stop tolerating the heretical gospel of works. He says, it's called legalism. He says, wake up to the fact that it will put you in bondage, into a bondage syndrome that won't end. He says, the true gospel of grace, however, will set you free forever. Absolutely. I got set free years ago, and I remember the process I went through to get there. And so are you free? That's my question. Are you free? He says, the danger of buying into a false theology is you can see it because it has all these laws, rules, and regulations that you can't find in the Bible. They invented all this stuff. And whoever's telling you all this stuff, they're prideful and they're letting you know, hey, roll the way we roll and you'll touch God and you'll be holy like we are. Swindoll defines legalism like this. It's excellent definition. He says, legalism is an attitude, a mentality based on pride. That's the truth. He says, it's an obsessive conformity to an artificial standard for the purpose of exalting oneself. A legalist assumes the place of authority and pushes it to unwarranted extremes. He says, legalism is rigid, grim, exacting, and law-like in nature. He says, pride, which is at the heart of legalism, works in sync with other motivating factors like guilt. Why'd you go there? You know, why'd you talk to them? Why are you, it's like fear. He says, and shame. He says, it leads to an emphasis on what should not be and what one should not be doing. It flourishes in the drab context of negativism. You know, you could pack out a church by being a legalist. I just let you miss one time, and I go through the video, and I look at the audience, and I see you weren't there. Why are you looking at all the video? Well, I got to see who's in church. And then we track you down through facial recognition. I called you during the week. Today, it's DC, you know? Hey, I see you've been missing for 2 Sundays. Where you been? Serious? You know this kind of stuff? Don't worry, I don't know this kind of stuff, but if a legalist, you know, if you're really walking with God, I mean, you're not going to ever miss a church service and, you know, et cetera, that type of thing. So I've been down that legalistic road. I remember one time in high school, I had bought a Led Zeppelin double album, which back then was like 10 bucks, a fortune. It really was. $10 was like I spent $300 on a double album. And I bought Physical Graffiti. I loved it. It had some great music on it. And I was talking to some buddies out in front of the church after a service about it at my legalistic church about Led Zeppelin. Not a good idea. And we were near a Navy base. We had a bunch of sailors. That's how my dad met my mom. He was stationed, you know, there. And so we always had a bunch of sailors. So an older sailor. So when I'm like 16, here comes this 20-something-year-old sailor, you know. I remember his name, too. That's the scary part. Evan, the legalist. Hey, man, I kind of overheard you talking about Led Zeppelin. Yeah, what about it? This is a great album. How dare you as a Christian buy that album? I mean, you call yourself a godly person. A godly person would never have an album like that. Dude, what's wrong with Led Zeppelin? Like, you can't do that. I mean, serious. I mean, he was all over me. All my friends are like, whoa, man, back up, you know? You ever run into Evan? And if you're in the Navy, could you help me track him down? I need to talk to him. I mean, it's just like, I have lived in that. So Paul says, understand the freedom that you have in Christ, not to disobey biblical moral statements, but just enjoy your life. He says the two areas that illegalists attack in this church, he says in Colossae, are diet and days. Diet and days. He says, don't let anybody, you know, hold you with, are you observing a new moon festival, a Shabbat day, a Sabbath day, or, you know, food or drink. So if you think about this, in the Old Testament, this is a softball question, were there laws of what you could not eat? Yeah. A lot of them. You can't read Leviticus and go, whoa, I am so glad I don't live then. I'd be skinny as a rail. I wouldn't be eating anything. Because the law was very specific. I know, because I've studied Leviticus, chapter 11 especially, and chapter 17. 11 and 17, you can eat this, you can't eat that. Why did God tell his people, you can't eat that, you can't eat this? Well, some will say, well, God, you know, he knew the hygiene value of eating this and not that, so he told them to kind of preserve their hygiene. Well, that may be true. That's not the primary reason. God was showing them, this is holy, that's unholy. That's impure, this is pure. He was teaching them this concept, so they would be a special holy people. But now that Jesus has come, I don't have to worry about Leviticus chapter 11 anymore. Why? He fulfilled the law. Aren't you glad? You can go to Five Guys today. I can come in there. I can see you. You can go to your favorite barbecue place and get a pulled pork sandwich. I can walk in as an Old Testament major two times over, and I'm not going to come to your table and go, oh, I am praying for you. No, it's like, hey, Jesus freed me, man. Enjoy the pulled pork. I mean, you're free, right? Yeah. Now, but some people have a hard time with this. Peter had a hard time with it because Peter, we know, was a hypocrite. Peter, a Jew. If he's with Jews, he would eat Jewish food. And when he's with Gentiles, it's party on. And Paul found out about this. What Paul say? I got to talk to Peter. I need to confront him. I need to admonish him to his face. Man, you're a hypocrite. And so Peter found out, I am free, because God gave him a vision and showed him, Peter, you're free to eat. Enjoy. Paul had to teach about this. Romans 14 and 1 Corinthians 10. Those two passages, worth your read and study. I'll summarize them for you. I'll give you the cliff notes of Romans 14 and 1 Corinthians 10, 28 to 31. Paul basically talks about, there's in Christianity, there's a weak Christian and a strong Christian. And when it comes to doing stuff, it takes a lot of wisdom to know, should I do this, should I not do that? A strong brother is like, I don't have any problem that you bought Led Zeppelin album. A weak brother is, I can't believe you brought it. You see what I mean? But the thing is, which I've noticed in my Christian life, the weak brother thinks he's the strong brother. And he will let you know that he's spiritual and you're not. I've been harangued many times in my lifetime by those kinds of people. And so Paul says, stronger brother, he enjoys his life a little bit more. And a weaker brother, he's got all kinds of laws, rules, and regulations. Now, that doesn't mean I push a weaker brother, right? So if I'm with a weaker brother that he has a problem with wine, having a glass, I don't drink wine, but use it as an illustration. So say I'm with a weak brother, he has a problem with wine, and I have a glass of wine with my spaghetti dinner, right? If I know he has a problem with that, then I'm not going to have a glass of wine, right? Yeah. I'm not going to push him. But is it a sin to me to have a glass of wine? No. I don't drink it because it puts me to sleep. But it's okay if I did. And so Paul says, you know, don't let anybody judge you about your diet. Why? Because Jesus fulfilled the law. I'm not under dietary laws anymore. So go enjoy your life and try to be a stronger brother, not a weaker brother. When I first came here, I was the pastor, a Marine in the church, and a businessman, invited me to go to a cage fight at George Mason University. And I'm like, serious? And he said, I know you played sports and you wrestled some in high school and stuff. I think you'd like to go with some of my buddies. They're not Christians. A bunch of my business buddies. You know, would you like to go? Yeah, I'll go. Yeah, we're going to meet for dinner. You know, before. Sure, I'll go to dinner too. So I did. I went. I'm a new pastor here. I'm like, oh, huh. I wonder how is this going to be perceived? You went where? Cage fight. What's a cage fight? Do you know what a cage fight is? Yeah, it's kind of like a church fight. You're putting a couple of people in the ring. They know karate and everything, and they're going to do all their karate to subdue the other guy, that kind of thing. And I've watched this kind of stuff for many years. So I went to dinner, hung out with all these guys. They know I'm a pastor. I know they're not church people. And we show up at the cage fight. They got the smoke going. The guys coming out and fighting each other. They got heavy metal playing when they're going into the ring to fight. And I'm with all these guys that are totally godless guys, you know. And I'm sitting there. And I'm like, oh, man, this Metallica song rocks. You know, like if I was going into the ring, I'd want that playing, you know, or man, Nickelback, perfect song for this right now. So one of the guys sitting next to me is a CPA at this big firm. He looks at me and he goes, who are you? I'm Marty, man. He goes, no, I mean, like, what do you do for a living? I'm a pastor. Whoa, man, you're blowing my mind. He goes, you know all these songs. You know all this, you don't, not the title, you know the words. I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, I don't just sit and do Gregorian chants all the time. I mean, you know, I like Gregorian chants, but yeah, I mean, but I know my world, you know, because Paul did say to, you know, become all things to all men that I might win some. Doesn't mean that I have to do what they do. Like, if they're doing something immoral, I'm not going to do that. But I can enjoy my life within reason to build a bridge to them, correct? And so I did. And I've only been, in 17 years I've lived here, to one cage fight. But I'm just saying, but it's okay. For me, I'm a stronger brother. That's not an issue for me, you know? But a weaker brother's like, whoa, why'd you show up there? Well, Paul's telling you, don't let people judge you for diet. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 4. For everything created by God is good, and nothing is to be rejected if it is to be received with gratitude. Now, this doesn't mean that there's all kinds of things that have been made that we know are not good, right? Because my dad was a drug agent. So there's all kinds of things that are evil, immoral, that would destroy your body. So it's like, he's not saying go enjoy all those. Because I've had non-Christian friends pull this verse out like that and try to use it like wrong application. Those things are illegal. But he's telling you what God has made food-wise, enjoy it. Enjoy it. Now, you got to use your brain because within reason of your freedom, you wouldn't want to like go home and say, Marty told me every morning this week, I can eat 6 Twinkies with my bowl of cereal before I go to work. Okay, wives, if your husband told you that, what would you tell him? May. Yeah, you may, yeah. May. No. Huh? Don't even think about it. Oh, whoa, who are you married to? Yeah, 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 you know her well. Yeah, yeah, don't even think about it. Because like, if you're going to eat 6 Twinkies, it's not going to be good for the body, right? And so use your brain, but enjoy your life. That's what Paul's telling these people in Colossae. You are not enjoying your church. Have you ever been in a legalistic church? I have. And there's not a lot of joy there because they're very serious about the laws, rules, and regulations. So enjoy your life. He says, don't be worried about religious days either. Serious, Paul? Because what happened to this church was, well, if you really want to connect with God, you got to observe Passover, the Feast of First Fruits, Pentecost, Day of Atonement, you know, etc. You need to join us in these Mosaic observances. Hey, I'm a Gentile. I got to do what? Or I am a Jew who's converted over to Christ because I think he's the Messiah, and I know he's the Messiah. Why don't we need to go back to the Mosaic code? Because we're people in the know, and we know that if you don't do these things, you're going to anger God and you won't connect with him. So you need to do what we do. No, you don't. Galatians chapter 4, verse 9, here's what Paul says. But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how is it that you would turn back to the weak and worthless elemental things to which you desire to be enslaved all over again? He says, you observe days, months, seasons, years. He says, as your pastor, danger, danger, I fear for you. Why? Perhaps I've labored over you in vain. I mean, you're returning back to legalistic things? Don't do it. Chapter 5, verse 1 of Galatians. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and don't be subject again to the yoke of slavery. You don't have to go back into that legalistic law structure. The Lord has freed you from diet and days. Aren't you happy? I am. He says, don't let anybody do that to you. Put their legalistic structure around your life that has nothing to do with the scripture. Why are diet and days of no consequence? He tells you in verse 17 of chapter 2 of Colossians. These things, which are a mere what? Shadow of what is to come. But the substance belongs to Christ. Those things, all that legalistic structure was merely a shadow pointing to the one who would come, Jesus. So burn offering, Well, there's a shadow that one day the ultimate burnt offering comes. A day of atonement sacrifice, that one day the great one comes and finishes the day of atonement. The Passover sacrifice, that one day the ultimate Passover lamb comes. That's Jesus. He said, they're just a mere shadow. They're a mere shadow. Why would you want to return back to the shadow when you have the substance who's Jesus? Why would you want to trade? Well, you wouldn't want to. So what should you do? Wake up. Enjoy your freedom. Number two, he says that not just be paying attention to legalism, pay attention to mysticism. What is mysticism? Well, I went to the source of all wisdom and knowledge, not Wikipedia. I went to Britannica.com. Now, my parents bought us Britannica encyclopedias when I was in junior high. They took up half the living room, you know, and now it's online. It's totally awesome. What does it say about mysticism? Here's the definition. Mysticism is the practice of religious ecstasies, religious experiences during alternate states of consciousness, together with whatever ideologies, ethics, rites, myths, legends, and magic may be related to them. Now, I had a whole bunch of discussions after church because this is a thinking church. I never just preach and meet people out in the foyer who goes, hey, man, thank God for you. It's awesome. You know, it's like, I have some questions for you. You know, they have questions are great, you know. So are there Christian mystics? Yeah, I think there are. Yeah, there's Christian mystics. I'm not one. But a mystic isn't going to be, you know, less analytical than a guy like me, much more into the thinking. And like a pastor I used to pay a lot of attention to, Barry Reed, when I was younger, he would prepare for his sermons by kneeling in his bedroom for 2 hours and clearing his mind of all thought, just to allow his mind to be empty so God could fill it with thoughts of his greatness. And he would worship God for 2 hours before he even started studying for a sermon. That's kind of mystical. Because I asked him one day, I asked him, Barry, where do you get the power for preaching? Well, it starts with 2 hours of meditative prayer. I'm thinking, wow, if I prayed 20 minutes over a sermon, I prayed a long time. I mean, you know what I'm saying? At the time. So let's just put that notion aside. Yeah, they're Christian mystics. They're focused on sound doctrine. Paul's talking about false mysticism. Well, hey, you know, if you want to connect with God, you're not holy enough to connect with God. So to connect with God, you've got to connect through some angels we will introduce you to. Huh? Notice what he says. Let's read the text, what Paul says about mysticism. Verse 18, let no one keep defrauding you of your prize by delighting in self-abasement and the worship of angels. Taking his stand on visions he's seen. Oh, you cannot believe, man. I was in meditation. I was focusing on my one angel. Here, I can tell you my angel's name. And that angel helped me to go through some astral fields to get to this ultimate place of serenity where I tapped into a vision of God. It was unbelievable, man. Huh? That's what he's saying. The guy has seen visions. What does he say about these people? They're inflated without cause by their fleshly mind. They're crazy. They're into pride. He says they're not holding fast to the head, Jesus, from whom the entire body being supplied and held together by the joints and the ligaments grows with the growth which is from God. They're not hanging on to Jesus. They're hanging on to weird stuff that's got nothing to do with Jesus. They say Jesus is a God, not the God. And they're telling you, you're not holy enough to reach God. You got to reach God through an angel. So let us introduce you to this angel. That's a weird kind of mysticism. We're prone to doing this, you know. Heading into the wrong kinds of things. And so Paul says, be very careful of who you're listening to, what you're watching, keep an eye on legalism and keep an eye on false mysticism tied to stuff that's not doctrinally sound. Case in point, a couple of years ago, a lady in town here in Springfield died out by Costco. She had a nice condo, and she was the only child, and she died, and all of her relatives were dead. And so she left her estate under the care of one of our ladies to be the executor of the estate. So the lady called me one day and said, I got to liquidate this for my friend's estate, but I think you need to come over here. She said, there's stuff here. I don't even know what it is. So I'm like, okay. So I got in my car, and I drove over there, went through the front door, and I'm like, oh, she was a witch. She's like, serious? I go, oh, yeah. She goes, well, could you point out to me all the stuff associated with witchcraft? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I said, she's even got everything set up in the hallway, in the living room, everything with all of her little owl figurines and her dream catchers and all the weird Indian stuff. I said, she's got it all set up to make sure the spirits aren't blocked in their flow into her living room. She goes, you are serious? I'm dead serious. That's what they do. And I went into the kitchen, all the stuff that was in the kitchen, all the demonic stuff that was in the kitchen. And so we went around and identified it because this lady here, it's a godly lady here, she had to get rid of these things. She's like, I don't want to give this to anybody if it's associated with the occult. I'm like, well, you're going to have to get rid of half the house. Don't give it to Goodwill. So I went up the staircase, and I'm going up the staircase, and there's these massive pictures, like 3 by 4 foot pictures, all up the staircase of pencil drawings, original pencil drawings. They look like photographs. They were so amazing, of Indian chieftains all the way up the staircase. And I like art, so I'm going, man, whoever did this pencil drawing, wow, they were skilled. And she paid a ton of money for these. You know what they really were? They weren't Indian chieftains. They are the ascended masters that she had met in Arizona when she would go there to connect with the demonic realm. These are demons in her Indian lore that she connected with them, and they all, I'm sure, had names. And these are the ones that she would connect to get power in this mystical realm. Now, think about this. Suppose me, as a Christian, I'm looking at this going, man, I love the art. And hey, don't throw those away. Don't give them away. I'll take them. And I'll you come over to my house and you see them lining my hallway and you're like, what in the world? Why are those in your house? Well, you know, I just pray God would just get rid of all evil things associated with them. I just thought they were too beautiful to throw away. Those things, they were disposed of. Because there's no way I want that in my house. You want that in your house? I don't. Give me the heebie-jeebies just standing in the staircase. Because I know what she's using them for. It's a mystical approach to God. But hers was a mystical approach to the divine realm of demonic activity. Totally evil. I won't have any part of that. And so that's what the saints in Colossae were doing. They were tied in with those kinds of things. And Paul says, don't tie into legalism and don't tie it into this false mysticism because you'll lose your prize. Now, Christians will read stuff like that and go, see, right there it says I could lose my salvation. It says you're going to lose your prize. Is that what he's talking about? No, he's not talking about losing your salvation because elsewhere Paul says you can't lose your salvation. So what's he talking about? If you study Paul, you will realize that he lays down in his writings 5 crowns that are possible for Christians. 5 that God will give you on one day to reward you for how well you ran the race. Perishable crown, 1 Corinthians 9, reserved for those who keep their sinful body under control. A crown of exaltation, Philippians 4:1, reserved for people who lead people to Christ. Crown of righteousness, reserved for those who conduct their lives in light of the imminent return of Christ. Like, when I truly believe in the imminent return of Christ, it impacts how I live, right? The crown of life, James 1:12, is reserved for those who've suffered much for their faith. Persecuted for your faith, you'll get the crown of life. Crown of glory, 1 Peter 5:1-4, given to pastors who shepherded their church as well. You can't get that one, but you can get those other ones. And one day Christ will hand these things out. And we know from the book of Revelation, when he rewards you with these crowns, you then take them and do what with them? You then lay them at his feet and say, no, Lord, you are worthy. I'm just happy to be here. It's like I always tell my wife, in heaven, if I can just mow the lawn, I'll be happy. For all eternity. There he is, Marty, back and forth. Man, he said he loved it. You know. So whatever crowns I got is great. I'll just give them back to Jesus because I'm only there because of him, right? And so Paul says, don't let anybody take crowns from you that God wants to give you one day just because of the fact you got sucked into mysticism. Third thing he says, danger of asceticism. What's that? Well, read verse 20. I'll tell you what it is. If you have died with Christ to the elementary principles of the world, why, as if you were living in the world, do you submit yourself to decrees such as, he's going to quote the mottos of the church, the infiltrators. He's going to quote their motto. Because these false teachers, like false teachers in our day, they all have their catchy little motto. And just because it's a catchy motto does not mean it's truth, right? And so what does he say? Well, the motto is, do not handle, do not, what? Is it up there? Oh, it's not up there. Oh. Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch, which all refer to things destined to perish with use in accordance with the commandments and the teaching of men. What does he say about these things? Well, they're really big into telling you, hey, if you're part of our group, the way we touch God is there are just certain things that we just don't even touch. We don't even touch those things. And certain kinds of foods, we don't eat them. And we're very careful about what we do. When I was over in Greece last summer, I was going through the mountains in one region, and there's this giant pillar of stone. And I'm looking across this chasm at this giant pillar of stone, this rock formation, and hundreds of feet off the floor of the valley, there's a cave. There's a monk that lives in there, in this cave. He's a complete ascetic. He's cut off from the world. This is where he lives. I'm looking at going, gosh, I complain about getting to work. I mean, how does he get there? I mean, how does he climb up there? And then I'm thinking to myself, what about, we're supposed to be salt and light. We're supposed to be near the decaying meat and near the darkness to impact it for Christ. How are you doing that up in a cave by yourself? I had lots of questions. But asceticism, live and well in certain parts of the world. Paul says, don't get caught up into all of that kind of stuff. Because spirituality, according to Jesus, you're not defiled by that which comes in. You're defiled by that which comes out of your mouth. Why? Because Christ says that shows the condition of your heart. So Peter Frampton comes to town. Who's Peter Frampton? He's not an apostle. He's not a Christian. I don't think he's a Christian. But he comes to town. I go to a Peter Frampton concert. I did. I went. Parked in the casino parking lot, went in, had a great time with another Christian friend of mine. They were smoking some bad stuff in the parking lot, because I know, because I grew up in the 60s, in the 70s. I know exactly what it is, although it smells a little different because they've changed the contents from what it used to be, but I know what the smell is. And, you know, I'm not participating with them. I'm walking around them. I'm going in. But I heard from Christians, it's like, why were you at the Peter Frampton concert? I like his music. What's wrong with Peter Frampton? You know, he's sat in a chair. He's too old to stand and rock anymore. So he just sat there. The whole thing came out with a walker. You know, I'm thinking that's going to be me one day. Walker, oxygen tank. You know, and he just sat there and he just played. And, you know, I had a good time. And, you know, nothing immoral going on. Just had a good time, you know. And, yeah. And for some Christians, you shouldn't be there. To me, it's like, but you should be there occasionally because you build a bridge to people in that world. Because think about, what did Jesus do? Who did he hang out with? All kinds of questionable people. Why? Because he loved them. And he built a bridge to them. Doesn't mean that he accepted what they were doing. In fact, like the woman caught in adultery and sin, what did he tell her? Go and sin no more. Go and sin no more. And so Paul says, these people in verse 23, these are matters, he says, which have to be sure. They have the appearance of wisdom and self-made religion and self-abasement and severe treatment of the body, but they're no value against the fleshly indulgent. You can sit there and try to restrict your body externally to be holy. And Paul says, it's of no value because the problem is the heart, the heart. And so he says, enjoy your life. Don't be shackled again back to old laws, rules, and regulations that men build that God didn't. So danger, danger in three areas. The robot, Paul's telling you what you need to be careful about. Three areas, test time. Legalism is the first one. Mysticism of sorts and asceticism of I try to build my life so cut off from things. Like, should I go to a movie? Should I have Netflix? But yeah, no, yeah. There's a church split on the front row, but... I'm giving you practical things just to thinking about. Because like I grew up to where I could go to the movie and see James Bond 007 and pick one, you know. But my pastor's son could not. Why? Because it was sin to be at the movie. But my pastor's son, he never went to a movie. And I'm like, I can better reach my non-Christian friends because I saw Goldfinger. And I could better talk to my non-Christian friends because I went to a Santana concert. Do you know what I mean? Than my pastor's friend, son, who never went to anything. But God can use both kinds of people. But Paul's saying, you're free. Enjoy your life within reason. So that's what I'm telling you today. Enjoy your life. Go to your favorite restaurant after church and enjoy what God has done for you. He's freed you. Don't let anybody judge you.